Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
This is Kevin O'Brien of EWTN's Theater of the Word. I'm excited also to teach middle school and high school literature, speech, and drama with homeschoolconnections.com, an online Catholic curriculum provider. Your student can meet with me online for a live, interactive class. Whether you take apologetics with John Martinoni, or grade school with Jackie De La Viaga, or any of the other 400-plus courses with homeschoolconnections.com, online Catholic learning for your homeschooling family is available for you.
This episode is brought to you by Hallo, the number one Catholic app. Hallo has 1,000 audio-guided prayers and meditations for you to deepen your relationship with God. To listen to all of the Hallo meditations for free for 30 days, head to hallo.com/breadbox.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and as promised with us, Jason Evert from the Chastity Project. Jason, a longtime defender of many, many good things, but has become well known for defense and explanation of chastity as an important part of a fully integrated human life. And not only that, but helping people to do it, helping people to live chaste lives. You can find him if you just go to chastity.com. You'll find Jason and all of the work he and his wife do. And Jason Evert, welcome. Thanks for being here with us.
Oh, it's always good to be back. I worked there at Catholic Answers for 14 years. So basically a third of my entire life was spent working there and just absolutely loved it. You guys are doing great stuff.
Okay, so I'm not good at math, but that makes you what, like 65? Is that, am I?
86.
Okay. Yeah. I really got to work on my math. Yeah. All right. By the way, if you want to talk with Jason, and I know many people do, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Is this the issue of our time? I mean, in the sense that, you know, God made us for a reason, and this is a profound attack on our ability to relate to God, our ability to relate to one another. And it seems that the world becomes more and more desperate for a genuine relationship with God and one another. Does that make chastity the issue of our time?
In my opinion, it is. I mean, I think that key issue of just what does it mean to be male and female? You know, what is God's plan for human sexuality, not only in our bodies, but in our relationships? And I mean, just no small amount of confusion going on, not only amongst the teenagers, but adults within married families. I mean, if people just had this part of their life in the right spot, especially young people, I mean, how much simpler life would be, how much less anxiety and regret. And so, yeah, if we're pure in heart, we can see God. And if we're not, we're going to have a real tough time, not just seeing him in the life to come, but in this one, in ourselves, and in our loved ones.
Again, the number 888-318-7884. You have a new program called Forged to help men overcome addictions or the, I don't know if it's always addiction, but certainly the use and abuse of other people through the use of pornography. Tell us about Forged.
Yeah, we just had for so many years guys coming to us said, hey, you know, I'm really trying to break free from pornography, or I keep messing up with my girlfriend, or I'm struggling in my marriage. What do I do? You know, and we'd give them, hey, check out this app, try this website, look at this blog. But I just felt like we were hodgepodging it. So Matt, Fred, and I put our heads together and said, let's create one resource that we could just hand a guy and say, this is the journey to take. And so it's a 33-day program that you can take with another guy, father, son, or college roommates together. And every day of the book is a different like spiritual exercise and thought to chew on. But then we send you a video every day from a different speaker, maybe myself or Father Mike Schmitz or Father Jacques Philippe or Sister Mary M. James. So every day you're just getting a different kick in the pants, so to speak, some fellowship spiritually. And so it kind of approaches the issue, not just from theology, but spirituality, psychology, neurology, relationships, physiology, all that together, a fully human approach for how to find freedom when it comes to defending love from lust.
888-318-7884. Jason Evert, our guest. We're talking about chastity. It can be a difficult topic. One of the difficulties, I'm sure, and I often feel like whenever we do a show on chastity, we have to start almost with some definition of terms, because people will panic and be like, wait, does chastity mean celibacy? Is that what we're talking about? Well, you get all kinds of reactions. So help us out with what is a Christian understanding of chastity and its role in our life?
Yeah, I remember there was a mother who came up to me after one of my high school talks in an evening, and she said, I was coming to your talk tonight, and I was leaving the house. My husband said to me, well, where are you going tonight? And she said, oh, I'm going to the chastity talk. And he said, well, don't get any ideas while you're there. Well, a little bit of misunderstanding. Like, abstinence means no sex. Celibacy means the state of not being married. Chastity is something different. Chastity is a virtue that applies to people in all states of life, whether you're married, single, religious. And it's not the annihilation of desire. It's not saying, oh, sex is bad and dirty. It's ordering our sexual desires according to the demands of authentic human love. And so it's not simply in what I'm doing with my body, but with my heart, my imagination, my eyes. And it's really that purity of heart, of looking at each other rightly and not devaluing the gift of sexuality, but realizing, yeah, there's a sexual value in that person, but lust is when their sexual value kind of eclipses their personal value. And so chastity recognizes both values, but places them in the right order, where your personal value is greater than your the sum of your body parts. And so it's that virtue that frees us to love and frees us to know if we're really being loved.
It's a very it's hard to maybe I suppose that this is what you do. This is what your whole life is devoted to. But to get people beyond the idea of something prudish, you know, like, oh, well, you're just anti-sex, or, you know, that the person who even has a sexual thought, that somehow that's just that in itself is some sort of evil that the person is. This is not what you're saying. It's not a prudishness that you're offering.
Oh, not at all. In fact, I remember when St. John Paul II was giving a talk to bishops, one of them came up to him afterward and said, there's a word that really struck me that you said about how we need to make the modern gospel attractive to the modern world, even though some of these aspects are very demanding, like sexual ethics. How do we make it attractive? And he said, John Paul II became very serious, like a philosopher, and said, it is necessary to understand the soul of the woman. Like, all these things that have promised a liberator, premarital sex, contraception, abortion, have they not enslaved her? And so his idea, if we want to make this attractive, we have to understand the soul of a woman. And I think he did that. In his Theology of Body, he used a phrase called the peace of the interior gaze. And what he means by that is when a man is pure in heart, the way that he looks at his bride or at other women gives them peace of heart. Whereas I think a woman can perceive from 100 yards away if a man is looking at her lustfully. She feels kind of this restless vulnerability and even resentment toward him. But when he possesses purity of heart, it's an actual ability to give the woman he loves this piece of the interior gaze of knowing that she's being looked at not as something for his gratification, but as his respected and beloved companion. And so it's an ability, not an absence of desire. And I think if we explain it that way, I mean, the woman's ears would perk up like, wait a minute, I want a guy to look at me rightly.
Yes.
And the guys would get interested. It's like, yeah, I want to love a woman right. And if this is going to help me do that, tell me more.
Again, 888-318-7884 is the number. The sense of from the calls we get, and I'm sure from your ministry, men really do want to live chastely in many, many cases and feel ashamed and embarrassed and kind of gross that they can't do it. They can't master the self. They can't master the mind and body in order to live chastely. What do you say to that? Because I think many people will even say, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, I've been trying, Jason Everett. I am not the guy that can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I remember when we were writing the little Forge book, a friend told me, hey, you got to read this book, Unwanted, by Jay Stringer. He's an evangelical Protestant counselor and pastor. And his premise in his book was that we're going about this whole sex addiction recovery behavior thing wrong. He said, we're treating people's desires and fantasies and addictions like that's the problem. And he said, I actually believe that a person's desires and unwanted sexual behavior is actually a roadmap to the healing that they really need. And what he said is that we're a lot more likely to be ashamed of our unwanted sexual behavior if we don't understand it. And I remember one quote he said that really hit me. I just want to just real quick. He said, healing requires you to pivot from condemning your lack of willpower to addressing the role that trauma may be playing in your unwanted sexual behavior. A heart filled with an ounce of kindness for your life story will accomplish so much more for you than a mind filled to the brim with strategies to combat lust. And so instead of just like trying to attack lust, like you're cutting the leaves off a weed, he's talking about getting down to the root system underneath that might be fueling these desires and making them feel like they're impossible to overcome. So we got to get down into that root system of what's going on there. When am I messing up? Am I bored, lonely, angry, stressed, tired? Do I have accountability in my life? They need these tools to find the victory because God made you a son of God. And by virtue of that, you've got what it takes. Perhaps the strategies you used before aren't working because you're just trying to go Lone Ranger, though.
You really do see this as a kind of thing in which we need other men. We need the help of other people. We need accountability in order to genuinely make progress.
I think so. Because, I mean, especially because of our male pride, we want to just pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and be the victor. But, you know, Jesus said, like, pray that you may not enter into temptation. And we really don't want to pray that. I mean, we kind of want to pray, well, like, I'd like to kind of taste temptation a little bit and then have the heroic virtue to overcome it. But like, God knows, like, we have weakness and temptation is bound to come. And if we're all by ourselves when that happens and we don't have anyone to turn to, no one to open up to, we're going to miss out on so many insights. In fact, one guy I read, he opened up to a Christian friend how he's cheating on his wife and looking at porn and all this stuff. And his Christian friend said to him, well, he said, look, if what you want to do is look at porn and masturbate, then go ahead and do it. And his friend is like, what? And he's like, no, if that's what you really want to do, then you just go ahead and do it. And he was a bit perplexed because his friend was a devout Christian. But he said, he slammed his hand on the desk, said, look, that's not what I want to do. And his friend said to him, exactly. That's not your deepest desire. There's a goodness running in a current deeper in you than lust that longs for authentic sacrificial love. And for that man, it was such encouragement to know that he's not at his very core this weak, broken failure of a man, that there's good in him. But we just sometimes need our brothers in Christ to bring that out in us.
Jason Evert is our guest. He's the founder of the Chastity Project. You can find out all about what he does and what his ministry is at chastity.com. The new program, the new book is called Forged, and it's designed to help men overcome obstacles to living a fully chaste life. There are folks on the line, but there are also lines open, and we're going to get to calls as soon as we come back from the break. So the number 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. And you know what? We told you we'd give you a free Lenten apologetics email every day throughout Lent. And you're like, I forgot to sign up. It's like 3 days into Lent now. It's too late. It's never too late. It's you can have them now. Just head over to shop.catholic.com and sign up for the free apologetics lesson each day of Lent. It's a great exercise in growing in your faith and growing in the ability to defend it. Shop.catholic.com. It's free. And by free, we mean free.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at catholic.com.
Hi, this is Cy Kelly. Catholic Answers Focus is now a member of the Catholic Podcast Hall of Fame, which is something I invented just for this ad. No need to congratulate us on our phony award. Just become a listener. On Catholic Answers Focus, we bring in an expert to cover just one faith-related topic in depth per episode. Find Catholic Answers Focus on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts, or watch us on YouTube, or just visit our website and listen there, CatholicAnswersFocus.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Prayer is the only truly creative power in the world. God is the only one who can create something out of nothing. And when we pray, we welcome God into our hearts. And once He's there, He's going to do something. He's going to change things. He's going to transform us. He's going to make something out of the nothing that is me. That's the power of prayer for me. It's the only power that's guaranteed to change my life. And the only way I know to make that happen is through prayer.
Jason Evert is our guest. You can find all about what Jason does, the great work he does, at chastity.com. The new project is Forged. It's for men seeking a way to overcome addiction and obsession and all those things that get in the way of living a fully free and chaste life, a life willed for each of us by the God who made us and loves us. And mostly, a lot of time, well, maybe not mostly, I shouldn't say that. I'm not an expert. You are, Jason. But a lot of times what we need is practical help. We need someone to say how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, because sometimes I think our, you know, temptations, we think they're stronger than they really are because there's different stuff going on in our life of desolation. It's kind of like, I mean, today's Friday in Lent. You know, by the end of the day of Friday in Lent, like you drive by a Taco Bell and you're like, that smells really good. You know, any other day of the week, you're like, oh, that's like dog meat. You know, but it's because you just haven't had meat since last night. You're craving. And so sometimes when there's unmet legitimate needs in your life or just excessive stress or different things going on, unless those deeper issues are addressed, lust will seem like this unconquerable demon that's just too big for you. But instead of just taking it head on, let's look at the deeper issues that are making this thing seem more powerful than it really is.
It's one of those issues, loneliness, in the sense that we're so isolated in a way. And I'm not talking about with the COVID, but I mean, even just in the progress of modern life, so much more you can do alone. You know, even the people who play video games with other people often are playing across a continent or something. You're just you're just not in the company of other people, and it is kind of lonely. Modern life is kind of lonely.
I think it is. I mean, I have 127,000 friends on Facebook.
Congratulations.
And none of them know what kind of day I had today. Like, none of them has a clue what kind of day I had. You know, and like in any other time in history, if you had 127,000 friends, you would be just lavished with, you know, attention and connection. But one of the big things with pornography, I've heard it said that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety. The opposite of addiction is human connection. And so I think it's just so true that a lot of times there's just this cycle of shame and isolation. Obviously, this isn't just a guy issue. I mean, girls wrestle with this stuff as well many times. But yeah, a lot of times when we're going to porn, it's not just that we're simply going to look at somebody. We're going to be looked at. We desire the desire of being desired. We desire someone actually looking at us with interest and obsession and excitement. And just because there's none of that going on in our life, perhaps, hey, if it's a counterfeit, at least it makes me feel wanted. At least someone's looking me in the eyes and looks interested to see me. Even if it's bogus, even if I have to pay to feel wanted, heck, I'll take what I can get. And so we've got to realize that you have a really good desire there. You desire to be looked at with love. You desire to be desired. That's good. You don't have to throw that away. We just have to redeem the way we're going about meeting those desires.
888-31-TRUTH, the number. We start with Eileen in Washington State, listening on Sacred Heart Radio. Eileen, delighted to have you. Go ahead with your question for Jason Everett.
Well, hopefully this is a simple question. So I was speaking with a coworker here today, and this person's in Catholic education, and within their own family, they're having a struggle trying to figure out how to talk to their own child about why some of the more orthodox views of the church, especially in regards to sexuality, you know, why those are okay. You know, when God says love everybody, you know, but, you know, we're supposed to love everybody chastely, right? And so looking for a book that not only could she use to, you know, open this discussion with her young teenage child, but also maybe even within a classroom, some things that would help her to know how to broach this topic and have the right answers for a kid.
Okay, Eileen.
Okay, great question. Let's start a little younger than the teenage years, just for the benefit of the listeners who might have younger ones, because I think it's really important we don't wait until they're like 14 and then kind of like drop the chastity bomb on them. You know, parents like, when do I give my kid the talk? It's like, we can't do that. It's like, when do I give my kid the math lesson? You know, when do we have the English talk? It's got to be a lifetime of formation. So real little ones, there's actually a book called The Princess and the Kiss, and another one called The Squire and the Scroll, and the little storybooks you can read to kids about the gift of purity. We've got them at chastity.com. They might have them at Catholic Answers as well. Little storybooks for kids. Princess and the Kiss, Squire and the Scroll. Doesn't get into the birds and the bees, but introduces them to the gift of the body, chastity, things like that. As they get a little older, there's a book called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, and Good Pictures, Bad Pictures Junior that you can show and read to younger kids of saying, look, there's some great pictures on our computers, but there's some bad pictures too. And some people even put pictures on the computer showing parts of their body that should be covered with a bathing suit. And if you ever see one of those pictures, here's what you got to do. First thing, turn away, close the computer, come to mom, come to dad, let's talk about this. And I'm sorry that you saw that picture. So you're not raging on your kid that they saw it, you're apologizing to them that you didn't do a better job of keeping that junk out of the house. And so it kind of inoculates them to this stuff. So when they do see it for the first time, and unfortunately the average age is 9 to 11 years old, they'll at least have a strategy in place for what to do with it. Because if they don't, I mean, one of the saddest things I saw recently is a woman who helps children who've been sexual abuse survivors, and she's the number one perpetrator we're seeing of sexual abuse is not some live-in boyfriend or some creep down the street. It's 11 to 15-year-old boys who've been exposed to pornography, the number one perpetrators of sexual abuse against minors. And it's usually about a 6 to 8-year-old girl, like some cousin that comes over for a slumber party, parents aren't around, and this 12-year-old boy starts acting these things out he saw on the cell phone when the parents didn't put a filter to block that stuff. And so these are some of the preventative things that we can do. Now that they're well into adolescence, a couple of resources I'd recommend. Ascension Press has a curriculum we created called You, Life, Love, and the Theology of the Body. This gives the big picture of the beauty and the goodness of God's plan for human sexuality. It's not some litany of prohibitions and rules and regulations. I mean, it's a beautiful program that unveils God's plan for human love. So I would say use the curriculum You that you could get at chastity.com, get it at Ascension Press, and show that to the kids in the classroom. If they're 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, they have a similar program called Theology of the Body for Teens Middle School Edition. So those are kind of classroom things. If you want something in your family, we have simple little booklets called Pure Manhood or Pure Womanhood or Pure Love that you could give to a teenager, kind of introducing them that, yeah, God wants us to love all people, but first let's define love. You know, love means you do what is best for that person. And is it really best for a teenager to sleep with his girlfriend? Is he really doing what's best for her or just what feels good to him in the moment? And so we want to encourage him, yep, you're right, we need to love everybody, but now let's learn how to love rightly. And so if you want to go deeper than those booklets of the curriculum, we've got plenty of other resources at chastity.com.
Eileen, thank you. Really appreciate you getting us started. You're welcome to call with your questions, 888-318-7884. We're talking about chastity for men today, or women are welcome to call as well. I mean, we're not trying to limit the conversation, but Jason Everett over at chastity.com has a new program called Forged, meant to help men overcome all those obstacles to chastity. 888-318-7884, our number here. We'll go now to Lisa in Ohio, listening on Annunciation Radio. Lisa, glad to have you here. Go ahead with your question for Jason Everett.
Hi. My question is, I've been married to my husband for 7 going on 8 years, and I've been Catholic, like revert to the kind of being into my faith for the last 3 years, and it's, you know, amazing, but I my husband's non-Catholic. We were married in the Catholic Church, but he was raised Jehovah's Witness, and he's not really interested in, you know, participating in anything with me. And I just feel like we don't have chastity in our marriage, and I'm just kind of wondering how to approach trying to get that with, you know, I have, you know, I have a good relationship with my husband for the most part, you know, but it's been a struggle, obviously, since I've, you know, reverted to my faith. And, yeah, you know, we have two sons, and just kind of wondering, like, if there's any, like, steps that you think are or resources that would be good for me.
Yeah, yeah. Without diving into more details, if there is any issue of pornography within the marriage, there's a resource that I just came across recently called Bloom. If you were just to Google Bloom Catholic, you know, resource for women, it's essentially a resource for spouses of people who struggle with pornography. Like, really just to give women the support from the trauma of sexual betrayal when a spouse and a husband is turning to those things and then treating the wife like she's some prude that she has a problem with this. It's like, I'm not actually doing it, or I'm really stressed out, or it was an accident. And but it's infidelity in the marriage, and the woman's feelings need to be validated instead of her being gaslighted when it comes to this stuff. So Bloom is a great resource for Catholic women struggling with those things. Also, in terms of his openness, he probably has a lot of preconceived ideas of what the church teaches on chastity. It's just some, you know, bunch of rules, regulations. Someone who's done a lot of good work in this area in terms of marriage and chastity would be Christopher West. He has a book called Good News About Sex and Marriage. And what you could do is you could apply some good Catholic guilt to your husband and say, you know, today is my birthday, or today is Mother's Day, or today is, you know, President's Day, or whatever. For my present, I don't want a $50 gift card to Macy's. I just want you to read this book or listen to this audio book this week on your way back and forth from work. It's just a book about marriage and love, and just, I want to love you rightly, and I want to get closer to you. And this is a book I think would help us to do that. And so you're not treating him like he's the problem. You're actually treating him like he's the solution, because that's, I think, a real helpful tip when dealing with men in general, that they like to feel like they're the solution. Even if we are, in fact, the problem, we would like least to believe that we're the solution. And so play that card to the male ego and say, honey, this is something that would really mean a lot to me, and I'd love if we could read something like this together. And you know, he might be intrigued and surprised to see, wow, this is a beautiful vision of human love that the church is putting forth here. It's not quite what I had expected, this shame-based, guilt-ridden thing. And maybe he's not the book guy. Maybe he can do an audio book. Maybe there's a CD you could get him from Christopher West. We've got a couple of his at chastity.com. But a lot of these people, when they hear it, are like, wow, I've never heard it put that way before. You know, that's kind of intriguing. And so maybe it's not coming so much from you, but coming from another husband's perspective that, God willing, may open his eyes. In the meantime, pray for him and fast for him and don't give up.
Lisa, God bless you. Thank you so much for the call. Jason Evert is our guest. We're talking about chastity. You can find out all about Jason and his work in that regard at chastity.com. We are going to take a quick break. We have one line open, so we're going to get to as many callers as what? There we go. Two lines open. 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. If you do call now, we'll be able to get you on with Jason before the end of the show.
Catholic Answers Live.
If you spend any time on Twitter, Facebook, or mainstream media, you're probably familiar with the litany of slogans that skeptics employ to rescue you from the foolish belief that God exists. The constant onslaught seems to leave people with the idea that they have no alternative but to embrace atheism. How can a Christian respond? In One Less God Than You, John DeRosa breaks down 20 of the most common atheist challenges and shows you how to craft effective answers. Atheism is more aggressive and widespread than ever. Read One Less God Than You and prepare yourself to respond with the joyful truth that God is real. To get your copy of One Less God Than You, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
To many people, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I'll give you the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Have you subscribed to the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter? This is Catholic Answers Live host Cy Kellett, and I want to tell you about our new weekly newsletter full of behind-the-scenes information and facts you need to know about the show. It's easy to sign up. Just visit CatholicAnswersLive.com and look for the newsletter sign-up box on the front of the page. It's a great way to keep up to date with what's happening with the show and see what's coming in the days ahead, delivered weekly into your inbox. Sign up today for the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter and see what you've been missing. Go to CatholicAnswersLive.com. Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live, I always think of conversations about chastity as really good news because there's so much heartbreak. There's so much desperation, shame, loneliness in the world, so much of it connected with the fact that there's a, I don't like to use the word conspiracy, but there's a big deception going on about what human life is for and what where the true joy of our sexuality lies. And you only find it everywhere, in every book, media, outlet, or virtually everywhere, and now everywhere, on every corner of the internet. So when we have a guest like Jason Everett, who has devoted himself to helping people see the great glory of our sexual identities, the great glory of the gift of sexuality that God has given us, and how that's connected profoundly with our happiness, our freedom, and our ability to love, and that chastity is a wonderful part of that, not a horrible part of it. That's why I think of these conversations we have about chastity as bringing the good news to people. Jason Everett, our guest this hour, our number 888-318-7884, and you can find out all about Jason over at chastity.com. Every line is full. Jason, you ready to just plow through
calls?
Let's roll.
Yep.
All right, let's do it. Anonymous caller up next. Anonymous, you there with us?
Hey, I'm here.
There you go. All right, you have a question for Jason. Go ahead.
Yes, I do. First, I just want to say thank you to Jason for putting out Forged, because it really has been an awesome resource, and I encourage everyone to take a look at it if they feel that need.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. So my question is, Jason, I'm a convert to the faith. My fiance is a revert, and her parents don't necessarily take their faith very seriously. So whenever our parents warn us not to have kids too soon in our upcoming marriage, we have a hard time trying to explain to them why NFP is good and worth pursuing. Do you have any advice for us?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts on that one. If they're concerned about the efficacy of NFP, you could demonstrate them, you know, the studies that have been done on it. British Medical Journal says it's more than 99% effective in preventing pregnancy. You know, so there's plenty of stats showing it's extremely effective if used the way that it's supposed to be used. But the deeper issue isn't necessarily the method of family planning, but our view of the gift of human life. I mean, the church teaches that children are the supreme gift of marriage. And it's almost like if you got back, I've been to two weddings in the past 3 weeks. And imagine you get home from, you know, your wedding reception, you got all the presents sitting there, and one of them's like the size of a fridge. And it says like, this is the supreme gift of marriage. You wouldn't be like, we'll open that and went up on our fifth wedding anniversary. It's like, no, you don't want to dive right in. And so children are the greatest gift. And unless you have a serious reason to avoid pregnancy, the default position is not NFP. To avoid pregnancy, the default position is openness to life. And some people say, well, I want to be married for 3 or 4 years without kids so we can really get to know each other better. I always say, look, if you want to get to know each other better, have kids. You'll get to know each other real good. And it's like, why are we afraid? Why do we need to close off our love? Three's company. We don't need, you know, four's a crowd. No, we're marinated in a contraceptive culture. And even if you do get married and you get pregnant early and you have, you know, a baby, you know, 11 months after you get married, as pouty as, you know, the parents or in-laws might be, trust me, they're going to warm up to that baby real fast. When they hold them and snuggle with them, all those little, the ways they wanted to control the future family of their own children, it's all going to melt away. They're going to fall in love with that kid, and they wouldn't even imagine Earth existing without that child. And so maybe their concern is for love of their child, and I don't want you to be over your head emotionally and financially, and a kid is a lot of responsibility, and you might need to grow up and pay off your student debt. And so there may be a lot of, you know, valid concerns for the well-being of, you know, the child. But you guys, you're all grown up. You know, you can make your own choices. And children, I mean, couples who have more children have a lower divorce rate also. This does not ruin romance. You know, it's not this killjoy. No. I mean, people see us having like one, two, then we had three kids, and people started asking me, you guys done yet? I mean, you got your girl. I'm like, yeah, I've collected all the genders. I can stop procreating now. It's like, come on. So I would just try to joyfully, you know, not take too seriously, you know, observe what they're saying, but don't absorb it.
Anonymous, thank you very much. Collecting all the genders in California means 167 children. You'd have to have
Yep. So, I need a big minivan.
Terry in Washington, watching on YouTube Live. You're next, Terry. Go ahead with your question for Jason Everett.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. My question is, if you're within marriage, if one partner struggles with, you know, libido, and it's a difficult situation, it's not pleasant at all, and the other partner is patient, but you still need to meet their needs, how that can be chased, because you're not enjoying it and the other person knows you're not enjoying it. And so it just doesn't seem like it would fit that idea of chastity. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. No. Good question. I have a friend who experienced this in his marriage, you know, perhaps for a different reason. But, you know, he and his wife, things are going well for quite some time. And then she started to have memories of sexual abuse she had suffered when she was younger. And she told her husband, I can't really be close to you right now in that way because it's just bringing back too many bad memories. Good husband said, I understand, honey. I can show love to you in other ways. You know, and a week of abstinence went by in marriage. Okay, that happens. Then a month of abstinence went by. And, you know, in marriage, that happens. And then it was 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months of abstinence in marriage, at which time the husband really started wrestling with this, you know, with God, of like, Jesus, you know, I didn't sign up for this. And Jesus is like, actually, you did, you know, good times, bad.
I have the paperwork.
All kind of in there. And but the man, he just felt like he just didn't feel manly because his wife was not sexually responsive to him. And it just made him feel like less of a man. But he realized that by staying upon that cross of abstinence, he was becoming more a man to her than he had ever been before. And through her affliction, he was healed, you know, of his broken idea of masculinity. And through his sacrifice, she was healed as well. And so oftentimes a man's understanding alone will make a woman more sexually responsive because she sees how he's making a gift of himself through that self-denial of holding back. I understand abstinence sometimes is an expression of love for you. Okay. And her observing that heroism in him will probably make her more sexually responsive and receptive toward him. But I would also recommend for such a couple to also consider talking to a solid Catholic counselor who might have a background in sexuality and therapy in this area to be able to talk about, okay, why the decreased libido? Sometimes it's a physiological thing, and things can be done in order to prepare for intercourse in such a way that might make her more receptive toward that. You know, or there could be issues of unresolved trauma, as I discussed in my friend's situation. A counselor can help with the couple to kind of perhaps get to those roots and then help them navigate this. But you're experiencing, I think, with so many couples are in marriage that sexuality in marriage isn't quite what I expected it would be. You know, as some, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, young, you know, 20-something-year-old, we get married thinking, hey, it's all going to be like this. And it's like, wow, this is really tough. And marriage sometimes brings to the surface our faults and our wounds like oil and water to purify those things. And it's painful. And so sacrifice will be demanded on your part because in virtue of getting married, you give a husband rights over your body, just as he gives you rights over his. And obviously these rights need to be understood in the context of human love and selflessness, but we've made a gift of our body to the others. And so this may be a cross in your marriage, but God is with you in it. Take advantage of good therapists. You can go to a place like CatholicTherapists.com and search around there and see if you might be able to find one that can help you and your husband navigate this issue together with patience.
Okay, Terry.
Okay, thank you so much.
God bless you. Thank you very, very much. Jason Everett, our guest. We're talking chastity this hour. Lots of folks on the line, so we will keep moving. However, we probably can still take one or two calls if you have a question you'd like to ask Jason, something you've been maybe hanging on to this hour, 888-318-7884. Luke in St. Louis, Missouri, you're next. Go ahead with your question for Jason.
Hi, thank you guys for doing this. I appreciate you guys listening and answering the questions. My question for you is, I am in a new relationship of about 6 months, and I'm really struggling to commit myself fully to her, and it's because I see other pretty girls, and I think it's lust, or I'm trying to differentiate, you know, am I lusting, or am I wanting a different relationship?
Okay, no, good question. So I think you'll agree that once you get married, you never notice attractive women for the rest of your life except for your wife, right?
I mean, it's been 25 years.
Haven't seen one in 17 myself. So we say this just because attraction isn't the problem, and it's going to remain with you for the rest of your life. God, every woman's beauty is so unique because it's a finite participation in the infinite beauty of the Most Blessed Trinity. And so every woman's beauty just strikes you as so unique as if you've never seen a woman before. But in the same respect, after the beauty, you're left with a kind of a restlessness in your heart that there's a craving that could only be satisfied by the eternal. And so sometimes when, you know, we grow up struggling with pornography, we train ourselves a bit in the habit of mental polygamy. you know, or as C.S. Lewis calls it, a harem of imaginary brides,
wow.
you know, where we're constantly adored and desired and, you know, novelty is what we become addicted to. And so just know that you are going to experience these desires and attractions within this relationship, but you've got to step back and say, okay, what if every woman on earth looked exactly like my girlfriend does? What is it about her that would have drawn me to her? Do I really admire her? Does she bring out the best in me? Is she a woman of virtue? Because look, you could marry Miss Universe, but if she's not pursuing a virtuous life, you're not going to have a happy marriage. But if you marry a woman and you happen to meet others over the course of your life that are perhaps objectively more pretty, but your wife is a woman of virtue, like, you're going to have a happy marriage. And so these assets of physical beauty deteriorate over time. But as if you have that virtue of friendship and love for each other, you draw each other closer to God, you know, to me, it's a relationship worth keeping. And so if we put all our desires in finding the one who's going to be the most attractive, eventually another one's going to come along. And then we'll think, well, maybe I picked the wrong soulmate. And so just understand that your desires are normal. They're not a problem. Sexual desire is different than lust. If you think that sexual desire is lust, you'll always think you're failing at chastity because, oh, whoops, I experienced another sexual desire. It's like, no, that is a reaction we have to beauty, and now we're left with our response. Okay, I feel this reaction, but now I must respond to choose love rather than to use.
Okay, Luke?
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense.
That's you had to really think about that for a while, though, Luke. That was a long pause. Jason Everett, and go ahead.
And Si, if I could just throw one more thing in for the last caller that came to mind. Sometimes there's frigidity within marriage, not because there's something objectively disordered in the woman of not wanting it, but sometimes if a guy has been exposed to a lot of pornography, he's desiring sexual intimacy in a way that is objectively disordered.
Yep.
And expecting the wife to conform to this, and when she doesn't, he treats her like she's the problem. When in reality, she's not the one who just needs to give in to his desires in that fashion. Rather, he's the one who needs to realize his own brokenness so that he can love her rightly. And so because every case is unique, we just got to be careful. We're not just putting all the onus and burden on the woman for not being receptive, where it might be because he's not looking at her and giving her, like that we discussed, the peace of the interior gaze.
Luke, thank you for the call. But you did say a good Catholic counselor could be helpful in that, and that's one of the things a counselor can do is help to untangle these things that become entangled, you know, what I'm expecting of you is unfair, and therefore you're responding to me in a way that we can all agree that you're the problem. Well, a counselor can help you with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it'll really help you to feel heard, because sometimes we come at our spouses instead of coming to them. And sometimes the counselor can be a bit of a referee of like, okay, helping each other just to feel heard in a safe environment.
Yeah. Going on 30 years without noticing another woman. We'll be right back with more Jason Everett on chastity and your questions right after this.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Lent, a season for prayer, fasting, and almsgiving.
I used to believe that Lent was kind of a gray season in our liturgical calendar, but what I've learned is that it's actually a very bright season in that it focuses us. It shows us ways that we can stretch and grow, and by the time Easter comes, Easter's extra bright. I challenge my kids to think about what they can do, not just give something up, but what they can do and how it will change them and grow them in their faith.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. What a great way to spend a Friday afternoon having Jason Everett here, who is just... Jason, I have to say one of the things that I appreciate you about you is your voice is humane. And I feel like the teaching of the church on sexuality is humane. It's not in any way inhuman or cruel or bossy. It's a very humane teaching.
Yeah, because if you really think about it, I mean, we're made in the image and likeness of God. God is love. So when we act in a contrary way to that, it's not just how we ought to not behave. It's just not who we are. You know, if we are made in the image and likeness of love, only our actions that reflect that are when we're fully ourselves. And so the church's mission is not one of judgment and condemnation, but peace. Because if we're going to make any progress in this area, we have to retain our peace. Even when we fall, to still be at peace and put our trust in God rather than ourselves.
Maria in Dallas, Texas, listening on 910 AM KATH. Hope you're warming up there, Maria. First of all, go ahead with your question for Jason.
A little bit.
A little bit? Yes, okay, good.
It's just a very quick question. I heard you mention fasting earlier, and I would like to know if you have any resources to recommend for how to fast for a particular intention or a particular person.
This is not something that you have heard about before?
Well, I mean, just in the sense of you fast for Lent on Ash Wednesday and Good Friday and, you know, but...
And I think the context was, Jason, that you had mentioned fasting for her, a woman fasting for her husband.
So... Yeah, in terms of fasting, I mean, today's gospel, you know, Jesus says when the bridegroom is taken away, they will fast. So he's saying his followers are going to do this. I also look in the Gospel of Mark. Jesus says that some demons are only cast out by prayer joined to fasting. And what I get from that is if you're praying for something, but you're not fasting for it, you're literally boxing with an arm tied behind your back. It doesn't matter if you're Mike Tyson or Manny Pacquiao, like you're not that effective with one fist. And so when it comes to fasting, what we're doing is not simply praying with our souls, you're actually praying with your body. And so by offering up that little suffering, I mean, you might have been raised in a Catholic home or went to Catholic grade school. You remember the nuns, offer it up. You don't like this, offer it up. What does it mean? It sounds like you're telling me to shut up in a religious way. And it's pretty much that. But the theology is richer, where it's essentially saying that the church is the body of Christ. That's not like a religious metaphor. The Catholic Church is the extension of the person of Jesus Christ through time, space, and history. And so Jesus continues his work of redemption in his suffering body, which means the church. Your cancer, your unemployment, your alcoholic spouse, or any penances that we choose to take on, we can suffer with Christ. And yes, he's the one who earned all the graces for our redemption. But if we suffer with him, we can participate in the distribution of those graces to mankind. And so in the visible created universe, there's laws, gravity, entropy, all that stuff. And in the invisible created universe, there's also laws. And one of them is the power of prayer when it's joined to fasting. And it doesn't need to be bread and water from morning till night. If you can do that, fine. You would never want to take on a form of penance that diminishes your ability to live out your state in life. And so if a husband, I'm like, I want to be heroically fasting. I'm not going to eat for 3 days. And I'm grumpy as a bear to my wife and kids. Well, that's not how God is calling me into penance. And so maybe you could skip me a meal, skip snacks between meals, you know, give up this or give up that and saying, I am offering up this little sacrifice. And it's not the severity of the penance that matters as much as the intensity of love with which you offer that penance. But say, look, I'm going to give up that donut and I'm going to offer that up for the vocations of my kids. Just little things like this are just little arrows of love up to the heart of God the Father. I'm giving you this little gift, this little sacrifice as a prayer. And then you feel the grumblings in your tummy throughout the day. Why am I hungry? Oh, it's because I'm fasting. Why am I fasting? Oh, right, it's because of that. And so it's not just our soul getting our body to pray. Our body is actually reminding our souls to back into prayer. So, yeah, so any type of fasting is a great gift. You don't just have to wait for Fridays and Lent, because the church teaches we should be doing at least some form of penance every Friday throughout the year. It's just in Lent we tend to hone in on meat and things like that on Fridays.
Well, we have writing on about fasting at Catholic.com if you'd like to look it up there. And then I know Ave Maria Press has a book, Ave Maria Press. You can just find them online, called The Spirituality of Fasting, if you'd like to explore more of what the church teaches on fasting. Maria, thank you very, very much for your call. I'm going to head over to New Jersey now. Tom in New Jersey watching on Facebook Live. You are next, Tom. Go ahead with your question for Jason Everett.
Hi, Jason. Thank you. I'm 82 years old, and I lost my wife about a year and a half ago. And I have this friend who we've known for years, and I was very close with her. We were volunteers in a charity for many years, and she's about the same age as my wife, and her husband died almost a year ago. So we were close. We're very close. And my thing, I know it's a little bit off the subject, but I'm 82, and like I said, I was married for 46 years, and I miss holding my wife. I miss laying in bed and holding her, and that's what I miss the most, is the hugging. And I was wondering, I had read about spooning, and I was wondering what the church had to say about spooning, and how somebody as old as myself would be in the same situation and need to hold somebody closely without sexual desires. And of course, if I had them and if I could, I'd ask her to marry me. But
you feel you're past that, Tom.
What could you tell me about that?
Okay.
Thank you for the question. First off, I'm sorry to hear of your loss. I can imagine how heartbreaking that has been both for you and for her, and that void that's been left, you know, is a profound one. Now, the call of chastity pertains identically to an 82-year-old as to a 22-year-old. And so the standard of purity that God expects for us is for us to reserve the forms of affection that are proper to marriage for the sacrament of marriage. And so we could rewind the question, okay, should a 17-year-old boy be spooning, you know, a 17-year-old girl, you know, cuddling with that way on a couch that closely? The answer would be no. If I were to talk to a teenager, I would say no. You know, that type of physical closeness and affection is something that should be more reserved for the sacrament of marriage. It's going to, you know, stir up different desires, temptations, or whatever. But even the act in and of itself, I would say, is a marital act, to have two bodies that close together. It's a spousal expression of love rather than simply an expression of friendship, which could be seen through a hug or things like that, you know, standing upright. And so I would, you know, prayerfully discern, like, is there a possibility we could be called to the sacrament of marriage together? You know, is there a possibility? You could talk to a priest, the spiritual director, and discern, you know, could there be a possible vocation here? And if so, to prayerfully discern that. But then if not, if that isn't the calling, then this would be a sacrifice, I think, that God is calling you to offer up to him and saying, although I want this, strictly speaking, I don't need this. And so a lot of times we tend to think that our desires are needs that need to be met, when in reality, they're just profound aches or desires that we have that sometimes God is offering, inviting us to give him as a sacrifice. And, it's painful, but like St. John Paul II said, the perfection of love comes only through the cross. And so I would encourage you to maintain a chaste and pure relationship with this woman, and then prayerfully discern together if perhaps God could be calling you to the sacrament of marriage, since you both would be free to enter into that sacrament since both of the spouses have passed.
Okay, Tom?
Yes, thank you very much. You clarified that for me, definitely. And I really, really appreciate it.
All right, thank you, and God bless.
Praise God, brother. Thank you. Thanks very, very much. Our guest is Jason Everett. We're talking about chastity. Jason, I would like to review one more time before we have to go and close up business for Friday, the Forged program that you had, because we did talk about it earlier in the hour, but I know many people will just be joining us now. Tell us about Forged and what it's for and what it can do.
Yeah, we came out with a pair of books. One was Uncompromising Purity for Women, saying that lust is not just a guy problem. So we created that resource. And then we came out with a Forged book. Matt Frad and I did this one. Kelsey Skoke was the other. But it's basically a 33-day journey for guys that, you know, a dad could do it with his 15-year-old son. Two college roommates do it together. Whole youth group or high school full of boys can do the program together. And every day, it's kind of a different spiritual weapon to add in your arsenal to overcome this. Because we need strategies. Not just religious ones. We need physiological ones. We need sociological strategies. We need the fellowship, the accountability to learn about things like covenant eyes, how to have filters on our devices. And so there's so many. It's almost like we're living in a bad neighborhood and you could lock the front door, but you got someone coming in the back. You got someone coming through a window, up the basement, down the chimney, and all these portals of entry need to be sealed off and addressed. So that's kind of the point of the book. And then every day you get a free video from 33 different presenters. One of them is even like 30 different women on one video, just doing like little 10-second encouragements to guys. Just how awesome it is that they're in this fight. And so, yeah, it's called Forged, and we sell them for as little as $3 a piece so that guys can do this together and find the freedom that they really desire.
And you can get it at chastity.com, as you can also get information about everything else that Jason does at chastity.com. Are you back to speak in public yet, or is that, does that still have to wait?
We were doing about 150 a year, and now we're about to one or two trips a month. And so it's trickled down quite a bit, but it's starting to pick up in March, April, and May, which looks promising. So we're still booking talks and doing lots of Zoom presentations as well.
Ah, the beloved Zoom presentation, how we've all come to love it. I'm the guy who's on mute and can't get off mute. That's my identity now at work. Sai, we're talking to you. He's on mute. He can't figure out how to get it off mute. That's my life on Zoom. Jason Everett has been our guest. Find out all about what he does at chastity.com. And avail yourself of Forged. And say the name of the book for women again.
The one for women is called Uncompromising Purity by Kelsey Skoke.
All the resources that Jason mentioned will be on our website as soon as this program concludes. Nick puts them there, and he's always faithful in doing that. And it has been a wonderful week. I want it to be Monday again. I want to just start over again. Well, I guess we got to take a little break. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.